Aloha mai kakou. Thanks for coming, gang. Okay, so I was asked to talk just a little bit about summary of some of the work that a fairly large group of us have been doing, looking at utilizing local resources as fertilizer materials. You know, we're 2,500 miles from California, where we get most of our food. We also get most of the inputs that we use to grow what food we grow for ourselves here from there as well. We have a lot of mouths to feed. This is from, it's a little blurry, but it's from my commute in the morning. I didn't get up early enough, got caught in. Oahu in particular is very crowded. We have a lot of people to feed. We also generate quite a bit of waste. So there were a series of statewide industry analysis from 2007 was one of the first ones, to 2013. And really, there was overwhelming emphasis on generating what local materials we can here for soil fertility. So we've continued to look at specifically at these four. There's a number of other approaches and materials that folks are looking at. I'm going to focus on these four. Compost materials, primarily green waste, is the bulk of the material that's manufactured here. We do have some food waste composting. We have a little bit of manure. Our animal industry has declined. It's a little bit on a rebound, so we expect some more of those materials. We have a tankage material, which people also call meat and bone meal. Historically, that's been largely mortalities from our cattle industry, feedlot, et cetera. That's changed. It's about 50-50 fish waste and waste meats, with a little bit of offal in there, and the feedstocks will fluctuate. Aquaponics has developed in the state initially as a way to deal with aquaculture effluent, a way to kind of make some use of that, clean it up, and produce a little bit of an economic product. That's expanded, continues to grow, both as a commercial industry and as STEM skill development in schools, et cetera. And then invasive algae has been something that our more innovative growers have used to capture potassium specifically. Some of the species are useful, so there were quite a bit of work that was done to kind of look at the utility of that material. So when we talk about compost, you know, it's pretty important to think about quality compost can be very variable. I tend to think in terms of handcrafted artisan type, high quality materials that are characterized typically by high nitrate content, pretty unique plant growth regulator profile, and certainly a high cost. There's a lot of resources that go into it. They're not typically economically, it's not practical to use for large scale field applications. Where commercial green waste compost is the bulk of the material that's available. It's a totally different animal. It can be a very useful input, but the CN ratio and the quality is a little bit more marginal. So folks who are really into compost tend to disregard, or at least there's quite a bit of resistance. So some of the work that we've done is to address some of the resistance that our larger scale folks, like the seed industry, some of our biofuel producers who are interested in scaling up biofuel production, to look at use of this material, not as a standalone material, but in combination with high nitrogen materials. In this case, about 50 pounds per acre of urea, nitrogen as urea. This is safflower. This was up in Wailua area. And so our seed industry has adopted fairly large scale. Our large scale composting operations are adjacent now to a lot of large scale, at least on Oahu. On some of our other islands, we have other issues with the municipal green waste, same kind of marginal CN issues. We look at adding high nitrogen materials, in this case, mostly organic compliant materials. So again, this tankage material, added to this fairly high CN ratio compost to grow seedlings. In this case, this is eggplant. And then we also have growers who receive some of this material. On Oahu, our composters do a good job of monitoring temperature, so it's very easy to be in compliance for those folks who are certified organic. On some of the other islands, they don't do as good a job on the producer side. So the growers need to reheat their material, which will, in addition to making NOP compliant, once they keep track of the temperatures, also drops the CN ratio and improves quality generally. The high-value material, we've kind of focused historically on the seedling and on extracts, and we've talked quite a bit about that in the past. This graph you're looking at with the eggplant now is replacing some of the peat material with vermicompost, and at 20% or lower, we can get pretty good responses and replace some of the external inputs with the compost. With the aqueous extracts of these high-value composts, we do see a big bump in nutrient use efficiency, but we don't see a lot of actual nutrients being put out there. So for high-nutrient liquid fertilizers, we've been looking at tankage, extracts of tankage. Again, a lot of this work was based on anecdotes from very innovative growers. Using one of the things that we noticed with the vermicompost was fairly high levels, very active levels of nitrifying bacteria. So we tried a bunch of different things to enhance mineralization. Work is led by one of my colleagues, Dr. Ahmad, who's going to be presenting. You can see the date and time on the bottom there tomorrow at 8:15. Details about some of the work using this in the field. But the very small quantities of this high-quality vermicompost can be used to enhance mineralization in some of these liquid fertilizers. This tankage material, we've been working with it since the 90s. We know quite a bit about it. It's been around for a long time. Initially, it was used largely in animal feed, dog food. Now is adopted very widely for agriculture. Fairly high nitrogen, especially for an NOP-compliant material, CN ratio, and by virtue, fairly low. And by virtue of these two characteristics, fairly high, fairly rapid mineralization rate. So it's a very effective fertilizer to use. But, you know, as you know, nitrate is nitrate, right? So, well, fertilizers can differ very much in their quality and their impact on soil quality. Nitrate behaves the same whether it's coming from an organic material or if it's coming from a synthetic material. So we were interested in reducing leaching rate and which strategies that are commonly employed in synthetic fertilization, like split application, be appropriate for organic materials like this material. And Tia Silvesi, who graduated now with her master's in our lab and coordinates our research program, did this for her project. She's already presented her work. She's still around. Actually, she's here today if you want to talk to her. I put her email up there in case you want to contact her. She's here all week. Bottom line, you know, so using suction cup lasimeters, on the y-axis there is the soil water, nitrate, and nitrogen. Over time, that's weeks on the bottom axis. And pretty consistently, we saw lower levels in the split application of soil water nitrate. In this case, this is below the active root zone, a couple feet down. Differed in locations, but again, pretty interesting phenomenon. For aquaponics, we use primarily tilapia statewide. There's some interest in catfish. There are a number of catfish producers exploring things like paku, vegetarian for more ease in local feed production. Again, we use primarily tilapia. We have 1,000-gallon tanks feeding our runs. We have different beds. We use primarily cinder, where most of the nitrification occurs. And we've been doing variety trials and other work for a long time. We've got details on this posted, and I'll be standing next to it on Friday. Talking about some pak choi is kind of the white rat for our program. We're very familiar with that crop, and we know how it's supposed to behave, so we utilize it quite a bit. So one of the questions, that dotted line, the arrow's not showing up, where it says 3 year average soil grown Kona, we did quite a bit of work with pak choi grower in South Kona. Over the course of 3 years, we had very detailed information on individual head characteristics of over 1,000 heads. That's what that dotted line represents. One of our big questions throughout with aquaponic is, initially it was to deal with this effluent from aquaculture, and the question is, well, what are we producing out of the vegetables, the quality comparable to terrestrial-grown materials? And the short answer is yes, generally that's the case. Quite a bit of invasive algae has pulled off our reefs, primarily on Oahu, but the stuff's multiple locations. Again, it was being used by growers, innovative growers that are, people look to and want to follow. So we felt it was important to have kind of a feel for what some of these materials are doing. We had a graduate student looking at some of the different species, high potassium species, not all of the species are high potassium, and look at release rates. So quite a bit of data. And one of the bottom lines was that the carrageenan-containing species, which is that center set of lines, let's see if I got my thing. Here we go. So these potassium chloride, potassium nitrate run through columns. These are column studies. You can see the Euchema and Gracilaria here. Capophagus and Euchema are here. And the Gracilaria, which is an agar-containing species, consistently over multiple soil types, multiple iterations, was releasing at a slower rate. And because that's the agar-containing species, we looked at loading some of this potassium material, just running it through the column straight, and then loading it in carrageenan material and agar material. And we saw kind of similar differences in release rates. So one of the things to think about, too, in this case is pretty interesting because there's a push-pull between ag and management. So this stuff is coming off the reefs because people want it off the reefs and they want it gone. So they're manually pulling it off. They're reintroducing herbivores, sea urchins, a lot of other things happening. Climate change seems to be playing a role, too, and we're getting it's much harder to get this material. No one's sure exactly why. There's a hypothesis out there. But the bottom line is, that push-pull, if they succeed in reducing, how useful is this material? So thoughts of, do we culture less invasive types? If we do that, we should probably be focusing on carrageenan as opposed to agar-containing. Lots of other stuff going on. Some of our innovative growers on multiple islands are doing biodigester work. Biochar, quite a bit of that work is being done as well. So all kinds of materials are being utilized. Want to acknowledge our funding sources and assistance and say thank you very much and open it up for questions. And I think that we have a speaker who is, and mahalo to my TPSS colleagues who came at about 75% of the room here. We're missing one speaker, the one following me.
Yeah.
Okay. So, questions? How do you want to deal with the extra time? Sure, go ahead.
And let's give another big applause. Okay. This is actually a plant nutrient management workshop. As a follow-up workshop, this is our presenters. And there is an urgent need for developing some guidelines for urban and pre-urban gardening program. And at this point, those informations is not complete or lacking, or it is not in the form that consumers or urban folks can have access, because the outreach program is more carried out by the box stores, okay, fertilizers or organic, okay. So how do we go about reaching out? Even though there are master gardener programs, but that is not really a complete program. And reason being, we do a whole range of activities. So hoping that there is a strong support from the International Plant Nutrition Institute to develop a program of nutrient management, irrespective of whether it is organic or inorganic, to cater this up of energetic farmers that are involved in these urban areas. So that's what it's all about. So we can always open for any discussions. While we have to wait for 15 minutes, I think, Ted, you want to say something about Hawaii's, any comments? You got, feel free to say, anybody want to say anything, you can. This is more of a discussion, and this is an ideal time we can discuss something, and while we are waiting for the 15, that the next speaker comes in, okay?
Okay, yeah, thanks, Dharma. Well, just to, you know, take on the urban ag, I think all of these, there's multiple approaches. So Master Gardener, school programs. So in Hawaii, we have a program called Aina in the School. Aina means land. It has been a nonprofit-led effort that's changed, well, that hasn't changed. They continue to do quite a bit of work in our schools. But what has changed has been interest at the DOE level to really kind of engage in this type of activities. Our Master Gardening program has been strong for the past 10 years or so, and has numerous programs. I think, you know, aquaponics, and I don't know, I saw a number of presentations that are out there today. I think aquaponics holds a lot of promise for the kind of non-commercial applications. So we do have commercial application in the state. There are people making money doing it, exploring, you know, how big that market potentially is and what they can do. But I think we all agree within the industry that, you know, it's going to be a fairly small subset of total production ultimately. But as a tool for STEM skill development in children, as a tool for home food production, it seems to be much more valuable than many of the previous attempts and approaches that have passed through. We had a big push 5 years ago or so in multiple communities to kind of get people who were interested aquaponic systems in their yard for home production. Many of those are still in production. Many of those are still operating. Has been a valuable tool for them, and for multiple reasons. I think where you can engage people's interests across a wide range of activities. So, for example, it's not just a garden bed that's in the dirt, right? We've got a fairly interesting, a fairly complex engineered system where parents can get a little more involved with that. It's a little more exciting than just digging in the dirt. It's kind of raised here in Hawaii, as well as many other parts of the world. We have a strong tradition of land and ocean connection. You know, we idolize it as kind of the fish and poi concept, where poi is our staple, one of our staples, made from taro, and that is the land-based component. And then fish, obviously, is a very important protein source. And having these interconnected resonates culturally as well. And so that, I think, has really kind of pushed that forward. So where we can go beyond just the basic science and integrate the socioeconomic interface there, I think that is valuable. So that would be an example. So I'll leave it for someone else to discuss or if people have questions. So the question was, can you certify aquaponics? And the answer is a qualified yes. So yes, you can. The National Organic Standards Board, the NOSB, is recommending that the certifiers no longer certify hydroponic or aquaponic, and they kind of lump them together, which I think is the challenge. So we continue to, we can be certified. We have 4 acres of certified organic at the station. We have not yet certified our aquaponic operation simply because I can't afford the feed right now. I don't want to pay the extra money for the certified organic feed, which is double what we're paying right now for the feed. But you definitely can. It's fairly straightforward process. There's a little bit of a fight, and I think the fight is at two levels at this point. One is the larger scale hydroponic folks who really want to see continued support for certification of hydroponic from a business perspective. I mean, because people, you know, some people are making some money doing it, and they want to continue to be able to certify. I think from the science perspective, the logical, you know, logically addressing the concern is that organic is based on soil health, right? Which I think is an artifact of Dust Bowl, you know, issues with complete replacement of organic materials. So there's almost a dogmatic deification of soil in organics. Nevertheless, it's in there. And the reality is that for aquaponics, like our cinder-based systems, if you think about soils, they are, there's a mineral component, there's a living organic component, the biology, and then there's a, you know, a dead and very dead material organic component. So if you look at our cinder soils, our cinder aquaponic soils, we have worms that come in on their own. We also inoculate with a number of species of worms. They thrive in that system. We have all the components of a soil. So I think you can make an argument, a valid science-based argument, that we have created soils in these systems. And it's, you know, in my opinion, it's not just a kind of a loophole to get around the thing. I think we do have functional soils. And we have people looking at some of the ecological functions that you find in normal, healthy soils, disease suppression, et cetera, and looking at some of the aquaponic soils. So I think that's the next step. So there's a lot of interesting science that can be done. So yes, you can certify. There is pressure to change that. And I think we're going to see a lot of articulation between hydroponic and floating raft aquaponic as opposed to cinder-based and more created soil-type operations. Sure. Yeah. Right. And that includes for the discussion of the hydroponic aquaponic. Yeah, okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. So the comment was that October 11th is the deadline to make comments to NOSB for the meetings coming up at the, when did you say? Okay, cool. Right. Perfect.
Fertilizer recommendations, and it's not so consumer friendly, and if any homeowners like to go and do some gardening and so on and so forth, they are lost. The closest they could get is a box store, any of the Home Depot or Lowe's, just grab any fertilizers on the shelf and then just dump it over there. And then if you were to go into a search engine, internet, that not much information. But on the other hand, if you go into pesticides, there are a whole range of products and a lot of interests built into it. And this is not only in North America, it's across global. And the outreach program is much more active, more emphasis is given on pesticides, which is more of a
controlling things rather than having a healthy plant life. Okay, just like we are having that, do we want to have a good health system, or we want a good medical system? So partly because of the licensing or registration or certificate, do you think we should introduce in fertilizer recommendations so where everybody have some kind of certificate, so that more people will be able to attend and listen in the formal level of training, rather than just try and error any fertilizers that are chemicals are not being certified, or just snake oils being up on the shelf, which is purchased by the growers, and then they ended up in a lot of problem, and then they say, oh, I don't have green thumbs, or maybe it is due to disease or pests. And that is what is happening. There's active engagement of outreach program by the pesticides companies or pesticide handlers, chemical, rather than the fertilizer or nutrient management.
Right.
So I think this workshop, I think we should... Yeah, go ahead. Come on.
Because I think that's a program like that might be an area.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Master Gardener program is kind of the centerpiece program for that. We have urban ag tenure track agents on Oahu and on Maui. The position on Kauai has been vacant, and a non-tenure track person has been hired in for that. They do. It's 100% extension. They're agents. Cooperative extension agents. So they deal mostly with running the Master Gardener and then having a help desk. An extension agent. Extension agent. And so that's the challenge. The challenge is product. And so for us, for the content specialists, the researchers who can inform the folks who are putting this together, those types of beans don't get a lot of counting on the for tenure and promotion. So the agents do need to step up. They're overwhelmed. We're like every other extension, we're underfunded. They're completely overwhelmed. And so what they really try to do, and what we try to do as specialists and researchers, is educate the master gardeners, and we do get folks who kind of float to the top and shine, and our leadership, they hold field days. We have a second Saturday in the gardens, those types of things. So there are those activities. We do have people who go to schools. It's just really hasn't been as formalized as it needs to be, and it's mostly a resource issue. We don't have the people. And I think I don't want to take up your time.
No, I actually